Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprised with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are fresh off of UFC Vegas 110, and safe to say, with these UFC Apex cards, weird things happen every single time. It's never just a regular card. Now, those don't exist anymore. There's always first-timers for things. There's always weird things going down, and on this event, a lot of weird stuff went down. Now, I'm gonna be honest, I came in super confident we were gonna go 12 for 12, 13 for 13, however many fights were on there. But I believe I went 7-6. If I want to check, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So there were 13. So we did go 7-6 on our predictions, and we did nail the main event. So always happy with that. But 7-6 on predictions is just not what I'm looking for, especially if we went 7-5 last weekend. We were on a heater. Heater at one point. I mean, UFC Rio, we went freaking 11-1, so we'll look to bounce back with the rest of the year, but we do have a full card recap of UFC Vegas 110 on today's episode as well. We'll be discussing what went down at Saturday night's main event. The entire shape of WWE is shifting as we have now surpassed this little filler time and begin to head into John Cena retirement tour and Survivor Series territory, so we got a lot of fun stuff to talk about on today's episode, but we're actually be kicking things off in a super fun way. I have no new rankings to bring to you guys for the UFC. I have no new UFC fights to bring to you guys for the UFC, but something that we do at the start of every year and something we look at halfway through the year is my 2025 UFC predictions for every single division. And, you know, as the year is coming to an end now, we only have, I believe it's 5 events left. You know, we are going to be seeing how my predictions end up. So we will be reviewing this at the end of December. Don't think that this is the last time you're going to hear about this. But I do find it very fascinating what I was thinking heading into 2025 in the year of 2024 and where it has ended up. So we're going to go through every division and look at my predictions and see if they are going to come true or, you know, how well I did. So for starters, women's straw weight division on December 31st of 2025, I predicted that, or like on that day, you know, I make these predictions in 2024, but I predict on the final day of 2025 that Zhang Weili would be your women's strawweight champion. And I guess I am somehow wrong, and it's Mackenzie Dern, and I just never thought that. I never really did. The year has been crazy. I didn't know Zhang Weili would be fighting for 2 belts, and the fact she could end the year as not only, you know, a former women's strawweight champion, but as the flyweight champion is pretty insane. Now, for biggest risers, so I always do my prediction for who will end the year's champion, who will have the biggest rise, who will have the biggest fall in every division. And my prediction for biggest rise was Jillian Robertson. She was ranked at number 12 coming into 2025, and she's currently ranked at number 10. Now, she does have a fight coming up with Amanda Lemos, and Amanda Lemos is currently ranked in the top 10 right now. Now, as far as 2025 has gone for, she retired Marina Rodriguez. That's all she's done this so far this year, but I mean, Amanda is ranked at number 5. I would probably consider that the biggest rise of the year. I know Lupi Godinez and Yasmin Lucindo have both had pretty good years, so we'll look at all that, but I'm not too mad at that. As for biggest fall-off, I said Virna Jandy-Doba. She was ranked 3 at the start of the year. She is still ranked number 3, just lost in a title fight versus Mackenzie Dern. And in terms of actual biggest fall-off, it's probably Jessica Andrade. Right now, Jessica Andrade has fallen off very hard, former women's strawweight champion. She's gone 0-2 this year, losing to Lupi Godinez and Jasmine Jess DeVicious. No fight scheduled, so honestly, I think she might be the biggest fall-off of the year. Now, moving on from women's strawweight, moving into men's flyweight, I predicted champion at the end of the year would be Alexander Pantoja, and that prediction still has a case to come true. But what I have nailed is the biggest rise of the year, Joshua Van. He was ranked number 15 heading into the year. He is now ending the year fighting for the championship at the age of 24. I cannot believe I nailed that. I'm always happy with it. I'm juiced to see Josh Van fight Alexander Pantoja. And no matter what, I have nailed my biggest rise of the year, and I'm always happy when that is the case. Now, as for biggest fall off, I said Amir Albazi. He was ranked at number 3 coming into the year. He's currently ranked at number 4. He hasn't fought in since November of 2024. He hasn't won since June of 2023. I have no idea how this guy is still in the rankings. And as for actual biggest fall off, it's tough to say. It really is. There really hasn't been a massive fall off in the flyweight division. I'll say everyone has been able to somehow bounce back, even if they suffer a defeat. But I will say certainly someone like, I don't even know if I'm being honest. Kaikar France, Tatsuya Taira, Miro Basil, all these guys, Brandon Rival, they suffer wins, they suffer defeats, but no one's really had a big fall off. But I will say if Miro Basil does end up fighting before the end of the year, which for starters, there really isn't anyone for him to fight, and he loses, then my prediction will be correct. So flyweight division, though, nailed the champion as of right now, and as for biggest rise, we have officially nailed that. Now, moving into women's flyweight, I said to end the year would be Valentina Shevchenko, and had I known there'd be a double title fight, I probably would have picked Zhang Weili, but I still do have a chance to have my Valentina Shevchenko prediction turn true. Now, as for biggest rise, I said Natalia Silva. She was ranked at number 15 coming into the year. She's currently ranked at number 2 and was only knocked off because Man Fiora just got a massive win. So, love to see it, Natalia Silva. I have absolutely nailed this. Man Fiora was already established in the division, so yet another rise I've absolutely nailed. Now, my prediction for biggest fall-off was Rose Namajunas. She was ranked at number 6 coming into the year, and she is still ranked at number 6. She picked up a win over Miranda Maverick in June. She got that done. In terms of actual biggest fall off, yet again, nothing too notable, but I will throw out the name Macy Barber for pulling out of a main event literally minutes before she was about to walk off. So we'll see if she can end the year with a win, as I believe she's taking on Karine Silva coming up here at UFC 322. So we'll have to see, but as of right now, nailed the champion, nailed the rise, similar to the men's flyweight division. Men's bantamweight up next. Now, I said ending the year, Umar Nurmagomedov would be champion. Now, little did I know Mirab Dvalishvili was unbeatable. But I will say, Umar, starting the year off with a great loss. I say great loss because I still do think that is my favorite championship fight of the year. Honestly, Umar versus Mirab is just such a hidden gem of MMA fights. I'm not mad at that at all. So, and there is still potential. You might be surprised, but Umar Nurmagomedov is probably going to be the backup for Mirab versus Petr Yan. And there is a chance, there is a slim chance Umar could step out on short notice and face Mirab, because I think Umar is the only man who can defeat Mirab in the men's bantamweight division. But second closest is probably Petr Yan, so we'll have to see. But right now, Mirab is the GOAT of the men's bantamweight division. For biggest rise, I said Peyton Talbot. Now, Peyton started off the year brutal. Losing to Ryony Barcelos made absolutely no sense, but he was able to go out, pick up a win over Felipe Lima, and I think he's looking to get a fight coming up with Henry Cejudo. So if he could go from starting the year off with a loss, then picking up a win over just another up-and-comer, and then defeating a former bantamweight champion in Henry Cejudo, I would definitely consider that the biggest rise of the year. But honestly, biggest rise of the year probably is our champion, Mirab Dvalishvili. And this might change how I make my predictions, because he just went from a guy that out-grappled Sean O'Malley, to winning, a guy who was on a big win streak, he's a big grappler, to becoming the first ever fighter, if he does fight on December 2025, and was that December 7th, I think the pay-per-view's going down, he'll be the first ever UFC fighter to have 4 title fights in a year. I mean, insane. Never done before. So at the end of the day, we haven't had really anyone in the division really rise up. I mean, Amin Zahabi would honestly be a great prediction. Maybe even Mauro Batista. Actually, Amin Zahabi might be the current biggest riser, but I will still maybe consider Peyton Talbot. I count him as a pick because I always like tally up my picks at the end if I count it or not. And if he is able to beat Henry Cejudo, I'm definitely going to give myself this one. Now, for biggest fall off, I said Marlon Vera. He's currently ranked at number 6 coming into the year. And in the year of 2025, he fought Ahmed Zahabi and lost. That's all he's done. So honestly, he has had a pretty bad fall off. But, you know, another shout out is to Rob Font. Rob Font has not had the best 2025. He's currently ranked at number 12 now. So we'll have to see. But, Marlon Vera, if he is able to get another fight in, which I doubt, maybe we could consider that. But as of right now, men's bantamweight, not as good as women and men's flyweight. Moving into women's bantamweight. This one was a layup. Layup as easy as day. I say Kelly Harrison would be the champion coming into the year, and she obviously did win the championship. I said biggest rise would be Aileen Perez. Aileen Perez was currently ranked number 13 and has since risen up to the number 8 spot in the rankings. And honestly, no one else has jumped, but I am going to say this. Yana Santos was outside the top 10 coming into the year and picked up wins over Misha Tate and Macy Chisone. So I may give Yana Santos biggest riser of the year, but Aileen Perez just hasn't fought in. Had she fought, and if she is able to get a fight, she will most definitely have the biggest rise of the year. So we'll see if she can get a fight before end of the year, because she started off the year with a bang, beating Carol Rosa, and has since done nothing. Now, as for biggest fall off, I said Hockwell Pennington. You know, obviously she lost to Julia Pena at the end of 2024 and has since done nothing. Hasn't even fought. And so honestly, I might consider her for having the biggest fall off just for the fact she's not even fighting. Moving on to men's featherweight. It's all men's divisions from here on out. And I said Ia Topuria would still be your current champion. It's crazy to think, guys. It's like, I just can't predict if a guy is going to go and up for a double title shot. And so now that I know if you want to go and fight for a second belt, you have to vacate your own, I would know that. But Ia Topuria has never officially lost the featherweight title. He's beaten the two goats of the division. So honestly, it's weird to say that Volk is probably going to have, keep this at the end of the year. So impressive stuff there. I thought Volk would have a fall off, but little did I know that he was just going straight out to fight Diego Lopez. I thought he was going to have to fight more up-and-comers, but hey, I'll happily get that one wrong. And as for biggest rise, I said Gene Silva, and I don't know. It's tough to say, because Leron Murphy and Yusuf Zal both had great rises this year. Diego Lopez has had an even more amazing rise, so it's been a good year for featherweight. And as for Gene Silva, the fact he is coming off a loss, I might not give myself this one, so featherweight, kind of a miss on my part. Same goes for lightweight, as how was I supposed to know Ia Topuria would fight Charles Oliveira for the lightweight belt? How was I supposed to know that? So I still had Islam being your lightweight champion. He's not. He had to vacate it. And the fact that he could end the year as welterweight champion makes this even more funny. But as for biggest rise, I said Joel Alvarez. And the best part is Joel Alvarez literally just left the lightweight division before he could even fight. He couldn't even make weight. So big miss there. In terms of actual biggest rise in the lightweight division, you could throw out the name Paddy Pimblett. I really like, because he's really been the only one who's jumped into the rankings over the last few whiles and has leapt an opportunity when he beat Michael Chandler. So I'd maybe say Paddy Pimblett for biggest rise, even though he hasn't been able to get a fight. And as for biggest fall off, I said Michael Chandler. He was ranked at number 7 at the start of the year. He has since lost to Paddy Pimblett. Doesn't have another fight book. He's ranked at number 12. I would very much consider that a bad fall off. Moving on to welterweight, I said Shavkat would end the year's champion, and a year has come and gone, and Shavkat has been unable to fight. So I don't know if Shavkat Rakhmonov is ever going to fight for a belt. He's been dealing with these horrible injuries, which makes me very sad. And as of right now, it's Jack Della Maddalena. He was not on my radar whatsoever, and all of a sudden, he gets a title shot against Bilal Muhammad. So good job to him, but honestly, I think Islam is going to take that belt from him at Madison Square Garden. Biggest rise, I said Carlos Prates. He was ranked at number 13 coming in. He had so much potential, and then he lost to Ian Garry. And Ian Garry leapt up as the biggest riser of the year, but now Carlos Prates has a chance to leap Joaquin Buckley, to leap Ian Garry, to leap everyone if he knocks out Leon Edwards, which I think he will. So Carlos Prates is still in the running, but honestly, I'm going to throw out Sean Brady. He's currently ranked at number 2. He's also taking on Michael Morales, who's ranked at number 8. So if Michael wins that, you could say that. For biggest fall-off, I said Leon. Just want to throw that out there. He was ranked at number 1. He's now ranked number 4. Hasn't won since 2020. Though, wow, he has not won since 2023. That's crazy to say. So Leon Edwards has had an atrocious fall off, but I could also throw out the names. Colby Covington, sadly, Gilbert Burns. I mean, Kevin Holland's kind of having a fall off here, but nowhere near as bad as these guys. So there's still potential for Carlos Prates, but it's up in the air. Moving on to middleweight, I did say that Khamzat Chimaev would win the big one, and lo and behold, he did. Now, I had Sharon Magomedov, who's ranked number 14, having the biggest rise of the year, and man's been out and lost to Michael Venom Page, who, at the end of the day, is now ranked at number 10. So, Michael Venom Page might have had the biggest rise of the year, but honestly, my biggest rise of the year is going to go to the number 4 ranked Anthony Hernandez. This dude has had an incredible year, knocking off Brendan Allen. That win has aged tremendously. Knocked off Roman Dolidze, really bullied him in that fight. And now he's a fight, apparently, you know, trying to be made with Sean Strickland for a title shot. I really love it. So, missed with Sharon Magomedov, but as for biggest fall off, I did say it is a lot of Sanya. He was knocked out. There really hasn't been anyone who's suffered more worse than a fall off than him, I'd say. So, unfortunately, we'll give myself that. For light heavyweight division, I said Magomedov Kalayev would win it. And honestly, my thought process was there would only be one light heavyweight matchup this year. Little did I know they would run it back and Alex Pereira would get the job done. So we did hit on that and then we missed on that. So no go for that. For biggest rise, I said Ibo Aslan. Little did.
Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
We all know Ibo Aslan was not that good of a unranked contender. The actual biggest riser of the year right now is Osmat Mirzakhanov, who's currently ranked at number 7, the undefeated light heavyweight. But there is potential for the number 11th ranked Bogdan Guskov with a win over Kambalhovich to leap him. So there is still potential out there. Biggest fall off, I said Jamal Hill. He went 0-2 this year. He doesn't even have a fight scheduled. He went from being ranked 3 to 6. He has had himself an atrocious year. Now, moving on to heavyweight, and somehow, I said Tom Aspinall would become your men's heavyweight champion, and little did I know that through all of this, he would never end up fighting Jon Jones. His one title fight would be a no contest, and he's going to somehow end the year as champion. So I guess I've nailed it. I guess I have nailed this one. I have no idea how. I honestly couldn't tell you if I could do it again, but lo and behold, I nailed the Tom Aspinall one. For biggest rise, I said Mick Parkin, and Mick Parkin really pulled up in March, lost a close decision to Marcin Tybura, and is just not fought again. So Mick Parkin, absolutely not. You could say Waldo Cortez Acosta, who's ranked number 6, but the real answer for biggest rise is the number 14th ranked Walter Walker. This dude has had an amazing year. He has had three round one heel hooks in the year of 2025. And you can make that five in total if you can, or four in total if you consider his August one as well in the mix. So Walter Walker may not have climbed the rankings the most, but he has easily been the biggest rising heavyweight at the end of the day. Biggest fall off, I said Curtis Blaydes. And at the end of the day, he fought one run unranked contender and one split decision. Nothing too impressive. Actual biggest fall off, tricky to say. You could throw out Marcin Tybura. You could throw out maybe even Sergey Spivak. At the end of the day, Tom Aspinall's stock has dropped stupendously over the last few days. And I think Tom Aspinall might actually be your biggest fall off of 2025. So those are the current standings as far as they go for my predictions at the end of the year. We'll see how they actually end up happening. But I nailed a couple of them, so I'm not too mad overall with what I was thinking. Now, in terms of other things that I think about, I was thinking about what would happen at Saturday night's main event on the last episode of the pod, and we made a little predictions, and lo and behold, I don't know if we went 4-for-4, but I don't know what happened, but I'm happy with every single result. And it was a very odd card. It really was. So we kick things off. WWE Saturday Night's main event coming to you from Utah. And we open it up with Cody Rhodes versus Drew McIntyre. And I think everyone knew when this was opening the card, we were not seeing a Drew McIntyre title change. Now, they did give them 18 minutes and 45 seconds. Was a good match. And then today it was a good match. Nothing spectacular. Nothing bad. We just know these two are good. And end of the day, what they're really doing here, and it's been at the demise of Drew McIntyre, who is just at an all-time low. Drew McIntyre's stock is at an all-time low. I just feel they've never wanted to pull the trigger on him. During COVID, they were just giving him the WWE Championship at times. 2020, 2021, they were making him a star. And then Triple H took over. He's kind of just become this big, bad villain, you know, this guy who was always in the mix for the belt, but never wins the belt. So it never makes any sense why he should be getting title shots after title shots. Now, Cody Rhodes is able to beat him, you know, actually hits a DDT on the belt. So you are now seeing heelish tactics being used from Cody Rhodes, which I think we are going to see come into play when he ultimately faces off with Randy Orton. Now, that's probably the next angle you go there. I don't really know what you do with Cody Rhodes. It's kind of feeling like filler until then. But if we continue, Drew McIntyre versus Cody Rhodes, it's just going to be filler. And it's not going to make any logical sense. So for Drew McIntyre, he needs to do something. He needs to really like amp it up. I mean, they were going to do this thing where he was like a bloodline killer. Like, and that was where he's going after all the bloodline members that have been taking him out. You know, Roman Reigns, Sami Zayn, Jey Uso, Jimmy Uso, Solo Sikoa. And they just dropped the gimmick for no reason. And this is now, you know, back-to-back PLEs where he's just been kind of doing nothing. And it kind of makes me sad. So I'll see what we do with Drew McIntyre from here. I can maybe see him joining that Vision team, you know, just to be like a heel versus face team at Survivor Series War Games. I'm sure they're going to throw him in the tournament to see who faces John Cena. We'll mention that in just a second. But Cody Rhodes retains. I'm sure he's going to remain champion until WrestleMania. And Drew McIntyre yet again loses. I swear, every time we talk about PLE, Drew McIntyre is losing. Next up, Jade Cargill defeating Tiffany Stratton to become the new WWE Women's Champion in 5 minutes and 30 seconds. This is just kind of an odd thing in WWE land where it's you can face, you know, an opponent. You know, Jade Cargill can face Tiffany Stratton multiple times. And when they're both good girls, you know, good girls, it's weird to say, but baby faces, if you will. They're both the good guys in the situation. And she'll lose. She'll lose every single time. But then she turns heel. She turns into a bad guy. And now she squashes her in 5 minutes. So it's just funny how that logic works. But yeah, Jade Cargill clean demolishes Tiffany Stratton. Makes it look easy. Not even close. And we have a new WWE Women's Champion. And this is the right move. This is really the right move. And Tiffany Stratton, unfortunately, did not have the best title reign. And it's not her fault. Because she is an immaculate in-ring performer. She is fantastic. She has the look. She has the persona. She has the on-mic skills. She has everything. WWE just booked her literally against Jade Cargill one too many times, against Nia Jax the entire year. When they booked her against Charlotte Flair, they had zero chemistry, and they just never knew how to properly book her. So if I'm Tiffany Stratton now, let's send her after the United States Championship. Let's give Tiffany Stratton the United States Championship. Let's make her and Julia feud. I think that is the next perfect direction for her. As for Jade Cargill, there may be a little filler feud, but what we are ultimately going to get, I hope it's at WrestleMania. It would be a perfect WrestleMania match. Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair. It is just right there. Bianca Belair is going to return. She's the good guy. She's coming in. I cannot wait for that. So Jade Cargill winning, it is fantastic to see. I absolutely love it. WWE, great booking decision. Next up, Dominic Mysterio defending his title against Penta and Rusev in a triple threat match for the Intercontinental Championship. 12 and a half minutes of just good in-ring wrestling. Really was. You have Dirty Dom just being this mix of Rey Mysterio and Eddie Guerrero. It is fantastic, and he just keeps getting away with things, and him, Rusev, and Penta had amazing chemistry. Rusev probably stole the show in this matchup. Rusev was an absolute unit, and the unfortunate part for Rusev is that I think you could easily give him the Intercontinental Championship. He deserves it since coming back from AEW, but Dominic Mysterio is just so good with it. He is just the perfect double champion. He's the mega champion, as they say. You know, he is the AAA champion from Mexico. He is your men's Intercontinental Champion in the WWE, and he just runs the show. So I don't really know what the end game is with Dom. You know, right now, he is just fantastic, and I know a lot of people are theorizing that John Cena is going to face him for the Intercontinental Championship at Survivor Series. I would love that. Here's my issue with that. Here's my issue is that if he faces John Cena for the Intercontinental Championship, I really don't know what we do. Because John Cena has won literally every single championship except the Intercontinental Championship. And it would be so good to see him win it. And then in his final matchup, he can just defend it. You know, he can either leave with the belt or, you know, lose the belt in his final matchup. Now, as for if we have Dirty Dom in that and he wins, it would propel him to unforeseen heights. It really would. So I'm very interested to see where we go with Dominic Mysterio from here. There's ultimately going to be the Finn Balor turn on him. But you're starting to see Dominic Mysterio being an Eddie Guerrero, where everyone cheers for him. He's the anti-hero, if you will. He loves the crowd, but he uses little cheap tactics to win. And I'm really loving it. So good stuff here. I love that Penta and Rusev got on this card. I really want to see those two getting more feuds. So we'll see where we go from here. But this was fantastic. Then, next up, we got a promo package, and it was about John Cena's final opponent. I think when that came out, everyone was kind of like, whoa, 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 whoa. Are we about to find out right now, right here and now, who his final opponent is? We get the package rolling. It's John Cena talking, and there is going to be a 16-man tournament held over the next course of a few months. You know, it's going to start not this Monday Night Raw, but the following one, which, if I'm thinking correctly, places that on, I want to say the 10th? I believe November 10th, which is one of the final two Monday Night Raws you're going to see John Cena on. I think it might be in Boston because I believe the Madison Square Garden one is the 17th. So starting on that, you're going to have superstars from Monday Night Raw, superstars from Friday Night SmackDown, superstars from NXT, and what everyone loved John Cena to say, superstars not even in the WWE. They're all going to have a little tournament, and the winner will face John Cena in his final match. And just kind of from the promo, something's telling me we are either going to see one of two routes. You know, I get a lot of people are theorizing Gunther's going to return. In my opinion, I think they're either going to go for nostalgia. You're going to get like an Edge return. You're going to get him facing not these guys, but you're like your CM Punk's, your Randy Orton's, your Jeff Hardy's, like those throwback guys. Or they're going to have what happened with when John Cena debuted is when he was given a shot against Kurt Angle. The first time you ever saw him, he was literally going up against the main star there, Kurt Angle. So I could see maybe a Obafemi, a Javon Evans, you know, these young, hungry up-and-comers. I could even see Dominic Mysterio be the guy to retire John Cena. So I'm very interested to see what they go with, but I don't know what's going to happen. Monday Night Raw is going to be super exciting over the next few weeks. Certainly, I'm sure they're going to run matchups on NXT and SmackDown. So this has just made the John Cena retirement tour much more exciting. And the fact we only have him for, I believe it's 4 more dates, is really heartbreaking. But it's reassuring to know that we are going to see 16 different men potentially have the opportunity to face him. And it's just going to be more exciting knowing each and every one of who they are. So that was super fun. That was a great little intermission. And that brought us right into our main event next. CM Punk, Jey Uso for the vacant World Heavyweight Championship. 21 minutes gave them plenty of time. And here's my issue. Is that this match kind of highlighted that the 2025 Jey Uso push just never was going to work. Jey Uso, I do not hate Jey Uso. You know, there's a lot of Jey Uso haters out there. I'm not one of them, but dude just can't wrestle as well as some other people. And he was just having some mix-ups versus CM Punk, which made CM Punk winning all the best. The highlight of the match, CM Punk putting away Jey Uso to win the World Heavyweight Championship. Was it a good match? We don't got to talk about. What we do have to talk about is the fact CM Punk has finally and officially won the World Heavyweight Championship. I think everyone rejoiced. Everyone saw that and was like, yes. Yes, I am happy. I am good. All is right in the world. Thank you, CM Punk. And you know what? Jey Uso, it took two GTSs to put him away. I guess that says something about the abilities of Jey Uso. But yeah, CM Punk's your new World Heavyweight Champion. There's so many fresh feuds for him. I can't wait to see where he goes from here. But man, it was such a feel-good moment. As for Jey Uso, you know, I say you turn him heel. I think you turn Jey Uso heel. I think you just do something different with him if you're going to keep him as a single star. But I mean, he was kind of whatever. I'm going to be honest. He was kind of like whatever, but CM Punk was a star. Love to see it. And the fact that we have CM Punk as champion opens a whole new door of possibilities. I have no idea where we go from here, and there's something exciting about that in terms of WWE. I hate unpredictability, and, you know, we have no unpredictability with all these new matchups that we have. And there was a hilarious picture CM Punk posted afterwards. It was him, Jade Cargill, Cody Rhodes, and Ricky Saints from NXT. He's your current NXT champion. And it was them all posted up, and it said, "Look at us." And it was a big F you to Tony Khan, the president of AEW, as those were four of his stars at one point, and they've all jumped ship to WWE, and they now hold four of the five biggest championships in the company. Obviously, the other one is the WWE Women's World Heavyweight Championship held by Stephanie Vaquer, but Jade Cargill, former AEW person, Cody Rhodes, literally one of the co-founders of AEW, Ricky Saints, former AEW star, and of course, CM Punk returned to professional wrestling in AEW. So Saturday night's main event, now being held on Peacock, I think now shows that we're going to see bigger and better things. There was no time restrictions. This felt like a proper PLE. And the only thing it brings me joy knowing is that the John Cena retirement match is on a Saturday night's main event on Peacock, and we won't have to worry about it being cut short for TV time. That is a super big relief. Now, one relief I unfortunately was not able to experience is my UFC picks not going perfect. So let's talk about UFC Vegas 110 because we nailed some things. We clearly missed some obvious things, and some things happened that just made me go, how in the world could anyone have predicted this? Kicking off the card, we're in the women's strawweight division. Oh, one of my favorite divisions, as Talita Alencar took on Ariana Carnelosi. And sadly, this was just such a layup, and like I was so certain on Talita Alencar, and then I always tend to do this. I always tend to look for underdogs. And sadly, I leapt at an underdog I shouldn't have, as Talita Alencar dominates Ariana Carnelosi on her way to a rear naked chokehold with 20 seconds left in the fight. Talita gets her fourth career submission, improves to 7-1-1, and might have just saved her UFC career. She's gone 3-1 now, and finally getting a big win here is exactly what she needed. And this was domination. Really was 5 of 8 on takedowns, 6 minutes of control time, 60 significant strikes to 25, and she looked really good. You know, round 1 only allowed one significant strike to be landed from Ariana Carnelosi. Round 2 landed more takedowns, outstruck her. Round 3 landed one takedown, got up on top, was able to lock in the rear naked chokehold, and she tried to get up, and that was it. GG's Ariana Carnelosi. Talita Alencar, very good work. And at 35 years old, now's a make or break time in the women's strawweight division. It really is. Now, I don't know if she earned herself a ranked shot, if I'm going to be honest. I don't think that's the case. But there was someone. I'm trying to think of as a woman's strawweight. Yeah, last week, Mizuki beat Jacqueline Amorim. Mizuki versus Talita Alencar, the next fight to make. Both women were in desperate need of a win. They got it. That fight just writes itself. So Talita Alencar, great work. And especially opening the card with a submission, we'll take it. Even if it wasn't the most exciting fight, she still got it done. As for Ariana Carnelosi, falls to 15-4. You know, just not it. Not really it. Of her four defeats, this is the third time she's been finished. She's gone 3-3 in the UFC and just hasn't impressed. That she really hasn't. So we could feed her to Jacqueline Amorim. That's a potential next option, in my opinion. Jacqueline Amorim is, of course, the girl that lost to Mizuki, shockingly. So that's a fight you could do, or you could cut her. You could cut her if you want to. But 15-4, like, she has experience, but it's just not looked good. She really hasn't. So I say we run her versus Jacqueline Amorim. Mizuki versus Talita Alencar. Super simple, but tough way to open the card. However, after that, we then began a little roll. As next up, Sung Hyuk Ko took on Phil Rowe. And look, apparently, you know, Sung Hyuk Ko has the nickname the Korean Tyson. And I don't know if you can be the Korean Tyson when you get 13 minutes and 10 seconds of control time. I mean, what? 30-27, 30-27, and a 30-26. These scorecards could have been 30-25. Phil Rowe did nothing. Phil Rowe did absolutely nothing, and he only landed 4 significant strikes. He landed 1 in round 1, 0 in round 2, and 3 in round 3. But this was as easy as day. Sung Hyuk Ko just taking Phil down and dominating him. 4.5 minutes in round 1, 4.5 minutes in round 2, 4 minutes and 8 seconds in round number 3. This was vicious. To Sung Hyuk Ko, the domination here was just impressive to see. And look, 6 straight wins. He's 13-2, 2-0 in 2025. I'm ready to give this guy a higher name. I really am. I'm trying to think of who. If I'm being honest, there's got to be someone. There really has to be. Ramiz Brahimaj is also on a tear. I feel like those two would really go to war against each other. Like, I could get behind that. Maybe someone gritty. someone who's been tested. I like a Jake Matthews. I like Jake Matthews against, Sung Hyuk Koh, or even like a Neil Magny. I prefer Jake Matthews versus Sung Hyuk Koh, but in this contest, I mean, he took him down every round. Control time was on point, and this man now has two fights in the UFC. Sung Hyuk Koh, two fights in the UFC, 10 total takedowns, 23 minutes and 23 seconds of control time. I've just never heard of that. He has a total fight time of 30 minutes. Through two 15-minute fights, almost 24 minutes in total has been him in control. So, Sung Hyuk Koh, you are dominant. I thought you would win, and you did. Good work. As for Phil, tough defeat. Really is for Phil Rowe. He's 11-6. He's 1-3 in his last four, and he's just been on the bad luck side of things. He really has. So, I think if we want to give him a bounce-back fight, Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland is desperately in need of a win. Phil Rowe is in desperate need of a win. So I don't really want to cut anyone we've talked about so far. There's going to be some people on here who definitely might be getting cut. But in terms of Phil Rowe, look, him versus Kevin Holland, we haven't ran it yet. Kevin is in need of a win. Let's make that fight next. Moving on, women's strawweight division. Sneaky banger here. Sneaky banger from Elise Ardeline and Montserrat Ruiz. I always love when the women show up just ready to win, looking to get it done, and especially when Alice Ardeline, who's the woman I picked, 30-27's her opponent, makes me happy. 138 significant strikes to 85 in favor of Elise Ardeline. Both women land one takedown, but can't even get 30 seconds of control time each. Like, this fight was fought on the feet, and it was fantastic. It really was. End of the day, Elise Ardeline dices up Montserrat Ruiz on her way to a unanimous decision victory. And look at this. Look at Elise Ardeline. At one point, she was, 9-7 actually in the UFC. She was not looking too hot. And now, two wins in 2025. Honestly, this wasn't fight of the night. But honestly, of all the fights we witnessed tonight, in terms of back and forth, this was probably the fight of the night. So great work to Elise Ardeline. Women's strawweight division, you found yourself a little sneaky banger here. 33 years old, from Romania, now training in England. Training in England has shown that she is clearly durable and, can hang. So I really like that. I really do. And in terms of what to do next with her, another tricky scenario. If I'm being honest, I don't know. You could easily just matchmake. Obviously, Talita on card, one on the card, at least one. You could do that, but I always like to find someone different. So I'm, shopping around names. Jamie Lynn Horth defeated Vanessa Dimopoulos earlier in the year in June. She takes on Teresa Bleda on the final card of the year. That would put her on a two-fight winning streak if she wins. Her opponent, Teresa Bleda, is also picking up a win. So, all right, how about this? Elise Ardeline should fight the winner of Teresa Bleda and Jamie Lynn Horth. It is very low-level women's strawweight division fights, but it's still niche names, which makes it look like I know a lot of knowledge. So there's a fight you can run there. Now, as of what you do, unfortunately, with Montserrat Canijo, this is her fourth straight loss. She's won one fight in the UFC. That was in 2021. She's on the cut counter. She's getting chopped up and served to a family of four. Sorry, Montserrat, you are just not cut out for the UFC. Nothing will beat when Amanda Lemos knocked her out in 35 seconds. Still my favorite moment from her UFC career. So, bye-bye, Ruiz. Elise Ardeline, you can stay. Next up, we had Norma Dumont and Caitlin Vieira in our final women's matchup of the night, and the implications of this were literally a title shot. Like, this is just so funny to me. The women's bantamweight division is just so forgotten at the end of the day that we have the number four and number three women fighting in the world for a title shot, and it's just on the prelims. Now, unfortunately, this fight does not give the division a good name. Split decision win goes to Norma Dumont. We nail our prediction there. She'll now be ranked number three, come up updated rankings on Tuesday, and I guess realistically is next in line for a title shot against Kayla Harrison. But in terms of this fight, nothing exciting. And people are saying this was a robbery, but Caitlin Vieira literally was just holding her against the cage. Yeah, she attempted a submission in round one. It didn't go anywhere. All right, in round three, Norma outstruck her 28-10. Clear Norma round, especially in a close fight when you end round three successful. I feel like you win. Round one, might have gone to Caitlin Vieira. I could give her the submission attempt. The takedown kind of made the difference. But round two was 50-50. Caitlin landed a takedown, controlled her for 2 minutes on the feet. Norma's piecing her up. And the one thing I do want to say about this is when Caitlin threw, it was looking just to throw. When Norma threw, she threw with intent. So I am very confident with Norma Dumont taking the split decision. I really like it. Six straight win. She's also a fantastic 9-1 you know, in her last 10, 9-2 in the UFC overall. You know, super happy with her getting this win. And, you know, she's going to be ranked number 3. I could even bump her up to number 2, even number 1, because why not F it? And you know what? You could always give her the next title shot. But you do have Hakuel Penton ranked at number 2 above her, and Hakuel hasn't fought in all year, so you could have those two fight in 2026, or even Juliana Pena. So it's either the number 2 ranked girl next, the number 1 ranked girl, or just Kayla Harrison can feed her to her. But Norma Dumont, I'm not picking to be Kayla Harrison. No, no, no. For Ketlin Vieira, she's gone win-loss since 2019, 2020. Like, Ketlin Vieira is just so hit or miss, and she's never really in a banger. So in terms of what's next for her, I've been clamoring for Elise Perez to get a fight this year. Come on, Elise Perez at ranked number 8. Ketlin Vieira will be ranked at number 4. That's the next fight to book, in my opinion. So we'll move on from that, but it's crazy to think that is the, you know, top 5 talent of the women's bantamweight division. Yikes. Next up, our first performance bonus of the night, as Dante Lockjaw Johnson really showed that lockjaw intensity when he submitted Cedric Dumas in round number 2. Good work, Dante. Really was picking up his first ever submission win in his career. Man's known for his power, decided to mix it up with a little grappling. And that was evident in round 1. You know, Cedric landed a takedown, but then Dante was firing back with 2 takedowns of his own. Round 1, somewhat close. I'd lean more towards Dante Johnson. Round 2 comes around, and, you know, he just showed that he wanted it more. Landed a takedown, got in position, locked in the guillotine choke. You know, Cedric Dumas tapped instantly. Did not look like Dumas wanted to be there. None whatsoever. And in terms of the cut counter, we can finally cut Cedric Dumas from the UFC. 10-4 with a no contest in his MMA career, and his UFC run will end going 3-4. Finished in every single loss, and he had a brutal no contest against Zachary Reese. So Dumas finally done with this guy. There's legit no logical reason to keep him. Bye-bye. You are absolutely atrocious. Now, as for our man, Dante Johnson, this man fought August 26th on the Contender Series and has now made a successful UFC debut. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that. I could even give him Rookie of the Year if I wanted to. I'm not gonna, but, you know, that's a conversation for another time. He's 7-0. He is 26 years old. He's in his prime, and I'm excited to see which middleweight he takes on next. I mean, a lot of options. Really is. I like to look at the last few men Dumas has fought, and I always love to matchmake guys like that. Zachary Reese, he's going to be looking to bounce back from a fight. Would love to see that. Dusko Todorovic recently picked up a big win in September. Would love to see that next for Dante. You could even give him Michael Okojacek. Like, Michael Okojacek has gone 2-0. He might be comeback fighter of the year. I kid you not, in this year. Sneaky good pick right there for comeback fighter of the year. There's a lot of options to do for Dante Johnson. So, middleweight division, we have a new contender on the rise, and we have a criminal in Cedric Dumas being sent to the cut counter. Next up, bantamweight division, Timmy Kwamba defeats Chang Ho Lee. Just kind of boring. Kind of boring at the end of the day. And this was Chang Ho Lee's fight to lose. For goodness sakes, this man shot a takedown with eight seconds in and controlled him the entire fight. 4 minutes and 52 seconds of control time in round number 1. You know, insane for Chang Ho Lee. And I was like, dude, Chang Ho Lee's going to dominate him. Then Timmy realized, I just need to defend the takedown. Did that, outstruck him 21-11 significantly. Round 3 comes around, Timmy lands a takedown of his own, gets 4 minutes and 20 seconds of control time, and Timmy Kwamba finesses a win. Second straight win, 2-0 in 2025. Good win for Timmy Kwamba. As for Chang Ho Lee, first loss in a while for him. 5-fight win streak is snapped. Hate to see it, but close fight. At the end of the day, it was a close fight. You know, Timmy Kwamba was the favorite for a reason. I guess, it was kind of whatever, though. So, in terms of what to do with both these guys, they're honestly in this kind of the same boat. Like nothing too impressive. Bantamweight division is super deep. You got a lot of options of who you could fight, in my opinion. I'm trying to think of some names we could shop around with. Honestly, is Davy Grant still kicking it? Davy Grant versus Timmy Kwamba? That could be a potential matchup. I know Charles Jourdain just submitted him, so we could run that. I know Damon Blackshear just suffered a defeat. I'd run Damon versus Chohang Lee, just to why not F it. Alatenge could be another option. I don't know, guys. Like, really, at the end of the day, both guys are just kind of average, just kind of there. So any unranked bantamweight, throw them their way. Next up, light heavyweight division, and Kevin Christian was an underdog for a reason, as he legit sucks. Billy Alacana goes out there, drops him with a beautiful punch, then gets his back, rear naked chokehold. Easy money for Billy Alacana. Easy money for him. Holy cow. Wasn't even close. Gets his second career submission. Good win, Billy, at the end of the day. You know, good win. 9-2 now, you know, after losing to Bogdan Guskov on short notice. He's gone 2-0 and just knocked off another contender. Kevin will fall to 9-3, and there's just little to be left here. Billy, quite frankly, dropped him, took the back. That was GG's. That was it. Light heavyweight division, you know, look out. Billy Alacana is here to take over, and I love to see it. I really do. I love seeing guys like that come in and just know what to do, know how to take over and execute properly. So I'll be interested to see what we do next with him. There's always the names of Ion Kutalaba, Ivan Erslan, guys like that to throw out there. So we'll have to see. We will. But in terms of what we could maybe do next with Kevin Christian, you know, there's always Marcin Pacino. He could be a name, or we could just cut him. Like, really, there's nothing to be lost from cutting Kevin Christian. But I like what I see with Billy Alacana. I was a little hesitant after the Ibo Aslan fight, but he can stay. We'll give him another shot. Good job, Billy boy. Next up, thankfully I nailed this. Holy cow, Alan Nascimento submits Cody Durden. Second performance bonus of the night. And props to Cody Durden for taking this on short notice. He kept this fight on the feet in round one, outstruck him 36-26. And then he made the mistake of somehow ending up on the ground with Alan Nascimento, who coming into this matchup had an outstanding 16 career submissions, and make that 17, as Cody Durden is just so prone to getting caught with submissions. It's actually hilarious. But hey, Alan Nascimento, 4 straight wins. This is now his second submission on that winning streak. Only 2 losses are split decisions. And the last guy he lost to Girlan Bekov, yeah, he's currently ranked number 12 in the division. So Alan, let's put him on the rankings at number 15, and let's give him a shot against the number 10 ranked Tim Elliott. That's what I want to do next. That is what I feel confident in. If not, I know Asyl Almabayev is taking on Alex Perez. Loser of that, book them against Alan Nascimento. That is the next fight to make there. For Cody Durden, look, he's lost 3 straight. He's 1-5 in his last 6. I still don't want to cut him. Like, he's not unentertaining. He just can't win fights to save his life. So, you know, they might cut him. You know, I wouldn't be too surprised. But if we want to give him one more shot, if we want to give him another opportunity, I say we just have him fight an up-and-coming contender. And there's a guy named Loner Kavanaugh, who was recently knocked out in China against Charles Johnson. I say we run that. So Loner Kavanaugh, Cody Durden, perfect bounce back fight for both guys. But Alan Nascimento, dude, 17 career submissions, 18 career finishes. Dude is an absolute animal, and I love it. Getting into our main card, we had Charles Radke taking on Daniel Frunza. And Charles Radke can do submissions? What? I was super unfamiliar with this aspect of his game. Gets his 3rd career win in his fighting career by submission. Good work. And especially after getting knocked out by Mike Mallett, this is a perfect bounce back way. And for Daniel Frunza, man, is not UFC caliber. I mean, oh my gosh. Like, Daniel Frunza, cut counter, don't even need to say any more. Fight lasted a whopping 14 minutes and 29 seconds. And there were 11 minutes and 41 seconds of control time going to Charles Radke. 31 significant strikes to 6. He had an 81% significant strike ratio, 163 total strikes, 268 for Daniel Frunza. And Daniel literally had nothing. Charles was going for submission. Round one, couldn't get it. Round two was just focused on control. And then round three was work in the back. Finally got the rear naked chokehold in. Good work for Charles. Chuck Buffalo Radke. Now, will he go deep in the men's welterweight division? I don't really know. But what I do know is he's kind of fun to watch. So there's a lot of options there we could do. There's a man named Axel Sola, who recently won in Paris back in September. And I think Alex Sola versus Charles Radke is the perfect next fight to make. That's my opinion. And you know what? I stand by it. As for Daniel Frunza, 0-2 in the UFC in 2025. Mans is not cut out for it. Mans is not built like that. So he is on the cut counter. Don't worry. He's the final cut counter for the night. Everyone else can still remain in the UFC. But for Charles Radke, him versus Alex Sola, that's the next fight I want to see. Speaking of submissions, we move into our next one as Yader Delvalel defeats Isaac Dalgarian. And this fight is going to be investigated by the FBI. I kid you guys not. Now, coming in, Yader Delvalel was kind of swelling as an underdog. You know, it was kind of even odds. And then all of a sudden, coming in, he's like plus 200 come fight night. And then just hours, maybe been like an hour or two before the fight, a lot of money on betting sites was coming in on Yair Davalel. Little did everyone know, there had been a fight leak news that Isaac Delgarian was fighting injured. Lo and behold, Yair Davalel goes out there, manages to get Isaac Delgarian to the ground without even taking him down. Isaac shot early, has his back taken, and Yair is just spamming rear naked chokehold attempts, eventually locks it in, and Isaac taps in round number one. So this fight, this is not the last time you hear of this. If nothing comes of this, then this is just a giant meme for some reason. But yeah, Yair Davalel makes very easy work of a guy in Isaac Delgarian who looked nothing like the prime version we've seen of him before. So there will definitely be an investigation into rigging, into the mafia here. I can definitely tell some screwy things were going on. But Yair Davalel, two fights in 2025, 2-0, both rear naked chokeholds in round one, and he's 10-0. You have yourself a little prospect here in the featherweight division, and I love to see it. As for Isaac Delgarian, I mean, Mans has gone win-loss-win-loss since joining the UFC, 7-2. He'll be back. You know, there's always going to be bums for him to fight here and there. Maybe he fights Andre Feeling next. Maybe he fights Melquiz Alcosta. I don't know, but in terms of Yair Davalel, I want to see him fight another hungry, unranked featherweight, and, you know, I don't know who, per se. Maybe David Onama? No, he's definitely not ready for David Onama, but we'll have to see. But Yair Davalel, this was a good win for the kid. Well, you know, if he was in on the, you know, fight fact that there was a fighter fighting injured, then screw him. But I'm going to, you know, speak under the assumption that he just went out there, got the job done, and looked impressive doing that, so good work, Yair Davalel. You got the job done at the end of the day. Next up, that's all I'm going to say for Jeremiah Wells, Thema Garimba, is that you got the job done at the end of the day. And, you know, I felt like I was watching the exact same fight as Chang Ho Lee and Timmy Kwamba as I watched the guy I picked go out there, grapple his opponent to death in round one, then in round two, get pieced up on the feet, get taken down, and then round three is brutally taken down. So Thema Garimba, he is, of course, the fighter that The Rock gave a house. He's 14-6 now, loses a decision. Very unimpressive, very bad. And especially for Jeremiah Wells, like, what do we do with this guy? Like, this guy is going to be 39 years old coming up and, you know, is winning fights, but I mean, he's just a grappling machine. You know, he was attempting submissions. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, it's not like this man was doing absolutely nothing, but, you know, it's still at the same time, it was just kind of boring. So good win for Jeremiah Wells. First win since April of 2023. Wow, been a fat minute since you saw a victory coming for Jeremiah Wells. What do we do next with him? Nicholas Dalby. Nicholas Dalby versus Jeremiah Wells is just kind of enticing to me. For Thema Garimba, maybe Billy Ray Goff. Billy Ray Goff is probably going to be in need of a win. Last time I thought about him, and you know what? Thema Garimba could be the guy to either beat him or get beat by him. So that's what we can run there. That's what we can do. But yeah, this was a very downer of a fight. And this was a very grapple-heavy card when we finally reached our co-main event. And this is where things get so interesting. And, you know, especially as a guy who picked Ante Dileje, I was a little pissed. But here we are, round one, Ante and Walter Cortes Acosta squaring off. You know, two big heavyweights, you know, looking good, going at it. And then all of a sudden we see what looked like a jab from Ante Dileje, and Waldo like covers up. It looked like it had hurt him, and then all of a sudden Ante's just laying on him. Waldo's holding up his face. He's just laying against the cage, and then all of a sudden the ref stops it, all right? And then, you know, we think it's over. Like, literally the UFC posts, Ante Dileje just got another knockout. Then Mark Smith decides it was an eye poke, which at the end of the day, it was an eye poke, and he restarts the fight, which kind of perplexed me. I feel like it should have been a no contest, but instead, I guess since he had never officially waved his hands in a motion, that the fight wasn't called off, like, just because he had stepped in, it doesn't count. And I kid you not even 10 seconds later, Waldo stuns Ante with an overhand, lands a couple follow-up punches on the ground, and gets himself a knockout. So, super weird co-main event. Super interesting. I mean, these betting scandals are never going to be beat now after this. I mean, very interesting. Very, very interesting. But Salsa Boy, Waldo Cortes Acosta, I guess, is the best heavyweight. Best rising heavyweight of 2025. I mean, impressive work. Gets his 7th career knockout, 8th career finish, and he'll probably be ranked number 5 come Tuesday in the rankings. What's next for him? Probably a fight with Curtis Blaydes. I don't think he's fought in Curtis Blaydes yet. We could run that fight. He could also fight, I don't know, Derek Lewis? I don't know, but all I'll say is that Ante Dileje, tough loss. Really tough loss here, buddy, especially after such a good debut against Marcin Tybura. He's going to have fights against guys like Mick Parkin, Walter Walker, Shmuel Gaziev. You know, the heavyweight rotation is so awful right now. And the fact that I know Walter Cortes Acosta would not survive against the top five is just kind of hilarious to me when I think about it. So, yeah, this fight was weird. It pissed me off that, you know, I thought Ante had gotten the knockout and then he didn't get the knockout. So, oh well, it happens. It's in the past. We're not going to dwell on negative things because the main event came around and my boy Steve Garcia got it done in style. I mean, I was prepared for a five-round war. I really was. And Steve Garcia said, I got about 3.5 minutes for you, Zach. And he goes out there and just destroys David Onama. And speaking of being prepared for five rounds, David Onama's first main event here, this was also Steve Garcia's, but David Onama just looked like he was going to just kind of coast through round one and then, you know, save up his stamina. And Steve Garcia just poured it on him. 33 significant strikes to 2, 43 total strikes to 2. He had this boy running for the final 30-second finishing sequence of this. I mean, Thurb Deem spared David Onama's life from getting beat up more because Steve Garcia was on him from the jump and just never stopped. I mean, great work, Steve Garcia. Dude is such a good contender. Dude is easily like, oh, had such a good year. Beating Calvin Kattar, beating David Onama. This is his 7th straight win. 6 of those have came by knockout. Of those 6, you have had half of them come in round number 1. I mean, Steve Garcia, welcome to the top of the division. He's ranked at number 12. I'm putting him in at number 10. I'm putting him past Pitbull. I'm putting him past Silva. In terms of what's next for him, Arnold Allen at 6, dude. Arnold Allen hasn't fought in a while. They both bring boxing-heavy styles. I love it. I love it. I just think that's the next fight that has to be made. That is a must to be made. Like, that is what you do next. Arnold Allen, Steve Garcia, writes itself. It really does. For David Onama, the 4-fight winning streak is snapped, sadly. But, I mean, he just clearly wasn't prepared. Just clearly wasn't prepared, and he'll have bounce back fights. Like, there's some unranked featherweights that are definitely trying to climb the rankings. I mean, Yair de Valle, featherweight on here, he's someone you could definitely throw into the mix. Unlimited guys. Unlimited options in the men's featherweight division for David Onama. He'll fight someone next year, but Steve Garcia called his shot when he beat Calvin Kattar earlier in the year. He said, I want an Apex main event against someone in the end of the year. He gets it. Doesn't jeopardize the opportunity whatsoever, and I cannot wait to see him fight a top five opponent coming up next. I'd even give him Yair Rodriguez, for goodness sakes, dude. Let's make Yair fight an up-and-comer, because I would pick Steve Garcia any day of the week. So, great work for Steve Garcia. Happy for him, too. Like, man, especially picking Steve Garcia. It's getting a little nervous coming in. I'm like, David Onama brings some power, but Steve Garcia, no issue for him. So, UFC Vegas 110 has came and went, and somehow, despite not having a crowd, is not even close to being one of the worst events of the year. I think it was decent. It really was. We had a good mix of finishes and decisions. Just a very submission and grapple-heavy card, which can be okay sometimes, but, you know, it became a lot. Especially, like, when we opened up, like, the card, I mean, we didn't have a non-grapple-heavy fight. I'd say probably until the Billy Alaconic-Kevin Christian fight, and that fight was 7 fights in. And after that, we had 4 more heavy grapple-style fights. So, thankfully, Waldo and Steve Garcia weren't playing games. They were coming for the knockouts. We love to see that. They both also got performance bonuses, if I hadn't mentioned that. But we are not done at the Apex, as this upcoming Saturday, November 8th, Gabriel Bonfim takes on Randy Brown in both of their first main events of their careers. Good for these guys, honestly. Really happy for them. Gabriel on the come up. Randy Brown, been established for a while, but is now on the come up. Happy to see it. Also on the card, Joseph Morales, the recent winner of The Ultimate Fighter Season 32. Are we on season 32? Season 33, one of the most recent seasons in the flyweight division, takes on Matt Chanel. Good opportunity. Uros Mensch and Muslim Salikov both look to bounce back in the men's welterweight division. You got Ismael Bonfim back in action. Ricky Simone is back in action. Haider Amil is looking for a bounce back win here. Marco Tulio is on this card. They're giving Adrian Yanez a layup of a win. Top 10 women's bantamweight action. Myra Bueno Silva versus Jacqueline Cavalcante. Heavyweights, Josh Hokit making his debut after winning on this past season of Dana White's Contender Series, takes on the debuting Max Jimenez. Also ranked women's strawweights, Tisha Penta and Denise Gomez, Daniel Marcos and Miles Jones, and Jackson McMay and Robert Valentine square down in the men's middleweight division, I believe they're from. I'm pretty sure. So lots more exciting stuff. No NFL talk on this card as I'm all pissy again over my fantasy football team with all my boys. Like, that's my 16-man is like my main league, and you know, I won it last year, my first time invited in. So I honestly know I can't be the best, but like, I'm just having a rough year. Like, you know, 1 week you bench DJ Moore, he does good. You put him in, he does bad. Vice versa. So, 15-yard receiving touchdown by Ashton Jeanty. That brightens my spirit. So we will drop our predictions for week 10 of the NFL season on the next episode. But yeah, as far as this one goes, no NFL. But yeah, pretty decent event for UFC Vegas 110. Same goes for Saturday night's main event, like WWE, another decent PLE, and just everything in general is going pretty exciting. My life is about to get a lot more hectic, guys. I'm about to start putting in 10-hour days at work, Monday through Friday, then at 9-hour shifts on Saturdays, and that goes until the end of the year. But we're going to try and get some big bonus checks, going to hit the phones, try and sell some people some Medicare, and just try and help out old people, because I know a lot of people at my job kind of just want to cash some checks, but I really want to help these old people get better Medicare plans. Let me help you. And in terms of my personal YouTube channel, someone brought up to me that I hadn't posted on there in a while, and honestly, I just haven't had time to record, so I'll try and get back into that. You know, spare time is going to be far and far between, but we will still bring 2 episodes of the podcast every single week, no matter what is happening, so ladies and gentlemen, whether you're listening to this at the end of the week, beginning of the week, go have an amazing day, have an amazing night, go make a better impact in the world. Jesus loves you, and you know what I'm about to say next. I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.